It's time for the Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL. Got a car question? Call us at 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. Now, here's the Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston.
And good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston, or AM, well, FM 100.3. You can listen to us there, or, of course, you can always listen on the app, WROLradio.com. You can go there. You can go to Google. You can go to your favorite Apple store, which there's only one, I guess, right? So, I don't know. You can go all over the place and find us, and you can find out what's going on. This week, interesting week, talked to some folks from the Smart Car Company, and we have a little taped interview. We'll play that in a little bit. And about the new Smart electric cars. Smart is the only car manufacturer, I guess, and even though they're owned by Mercedes-Benz, that has decided to go completely electric with their vehicles. So there's no, they don't in the United States currently, they're not going to have a gasoline version of the Smart. And then later on, probably around the world, that's going to be the case. And it's kind of interesting because Smart originally was a venture. It was going to be like a weird boutique sort of car that was a you bought it at a department store, basically. It was a combination. It was Mercedes-Benz and the Swatch car watch manufacturing, and it was going to be you went into, I don't know, Macy's and you bought a Swatch watch, and then you bought an electric car or gasoline smart car. And over time, that didn't really work out the way they hoped. There was some thoughts about importing them into the United States. They were being imported into Canada anyway. Mercedes decided it wasn't a good venture. And the cars actually came through, I think it was Penske. And Penske did all the certification and the federalization of the cars. And then they kind of went off on their own after that. So, Sort of an interesting concept to have a completely different company work on your vehicles for you. And since then, it's back to being Mercedes. Penske doesn't have anything to do with the certification process, I guess, anymore. So it's just back to the way it was. So we'll talk about that. The road test car of the week is the Hyundai Kona. We'll talk about that, and we'll try to keep you up to date on some, on different news and, perhaps recalls and so forth. My car got recalled, actually. Well, the Volkswagen in our family. We got a recall notice in the mail that said, and it was a little bit vague, and I can't really find a lot out about it, but it says that a computer update needs to be done. It'll take about an hour, and it has to do with erroneous check engine lights coming on. Not that I'll say I don't trust Volkswagen, but they did lie about a lot of things, and I'm wondering if my concern is that once they do something, is it going to affect emissions, or is it going to affect fuel economy, or is it going to affect both? And is this a recall that they're doing to keep from, I don't know, maybe getting caught doing something else? I don't know. So we'll have to wait and see. And if you're wondering, am I in the studio? Nope, not today. I'm not in the studio today. Decided it's a long weekend. I shouldn't say that. At work, at AAA, we get a lot of vacation days and holiday days. But it seems like we get them all from Memorial Day till January 1st, and then nothing from that point until Memorial Day again. And so we have Columbus Day, or what Dennis likes to call it, Indigenous Persons Day.
Dang straight.
And then there's Veterans Day coming up, and so there's so we get those holidays, and of course we get Thanksgiving Day off. And I know over the years a lot of companies have switched the day after Thanksgiving for one of the other holidays. We haven't done that, although certainly a lot of people do take that day off where I work. So we do have a lot of benefits like that, and I've been there forever, so of course I get 5 weeks vacation, which I seem to have used all up this year, except for the Veterans Day weekend where I did have a vacation day left. So I'm not going to do my program on that Saturday, but Craig Fitzgerald is going to, and Craig Fitzgerald is, he has filled in for me once or twice before. He is, if you listen to that other station right in the middle of the dial, sometimes at midnight you'll hear him with Bradley, who does the show on the overnights. He also, people know him a lot from Hemmings Motor News. He used to be one of the editors at Hemmings, and he writes a lot for Best Ride. So he's the one who actually puts my content up on Best Ride when I submit something to Best Ride. He doesn't just put it up. He adds a lot of extras to it, videos and funny pictures and things like that. And if you happen to own a Subaru and you get the Subaru magazine in the mail, he's the editor of that. So he's sort of everywhere. He's doing a lot of different programs. But he'll be filling in that Saturday. I typically never take a Saturday off. I usually figure out a way to do the program. But on that particular Saturday, at 6 o'clock in the morning, I'll be on an airplane. So they don't let me do my program from airplanes. So probably could, I suppose, with Wi-Fi, but and also I'm flying on an airline I've never flown on before, and we'll have to see how well that goes. We'll leave the overall opinion of that once we get back. But going away and just checking out some stuff and seeing what's going on. This is a really interesting partnership. I got a note from an advertising agency, and it said, Benjamin Franklin Institute of Technology and Prime Motor Group announced Prime Scholars Program, a new partnership that closes the automotive skills gap and creates a ready workforce for prime dealerships. The idea isn't new. The idea, though, is new that a dealership by themselves is doing it. But Benjamin Franklin Institute and Prime Motor Group announced that they have established Prime Scholars Program, a fast lane to employment for graduating college students and a source of skilled, educated workers for the New England-based Prime, and it's more than 30 dealerships. I think they have more than that now. As many as 15 participating Benjamin Franklin students will receive a $5,000 scholarship from Prime Motor Group and will work directly with the company part-time as they pursue their degrees and develop the skills necessary to secure jobs with Prime Motor Group upon graduation. Similar to Ford, Mercedes, BMW, and others offered tuition reimbursement with the idea you go to work for those companies afterwards. At Universal Technical Institute, for instance, they have a Mercedes program. I think they have a BMW program. Similar once you go through their regular program. Ford always had the Ford Asset program where you went to work for, you went to school at one of the Ford schools, and then you went to the Ford dealership afterwards. When we used to do the AAA troubleshoot or auto skills contest, some of the winning students also got tuition reimbursement or scholarships, and some of the scholarships were actually full scholarships for things like Universal Technical Institute, UTI, or New England Tech down in Rhode Island, and pretty much would pay for the whole thing. And then in the case where Ford was involved with our program, Ford would come up with another maybe $7,500, and that would cover part of the added Ford programs that UTI added. So it was a really good win for everybody. But this is sort of really interesting, and it was so interesting, I guess, that the Prime Motor Group decided, well, if big companies, big corporations can do it, maybe a small corporation can do it. So Prime Scholars creates a faster route to the middle class for automotive students, according to Benjamin Franklin President Anthony Benoit. We're grateful to Prime Motor Group for supporting our students both while they're in school and as they start their rewarding careers that can uplift themselves, their families, and their communities. Benjamin Franklin is a Boston-based private, affordable, nonprofit college that combines the practicality of vocational education with the intellectual exploration of liberal arts to help better prepare its students for career in technology. BFIT, I guess is the way they call it, but Benjamin Franklin, has relationships with more than 90 local businesses. At Prime Motor Group, we believe our commitment to people and community is our most powerful fuel, according to David Rosenberg, President and CEO of Prime Motor Group. Finding skilled students can be extremely challenging, and this program not only provides valuable experience for those students, it helps us develop our future workforce. Prime Scholars is a partnership in the truest sense because it delivers real value for all involved. The family-owned Prime Motor Group has a long track record of support for a variety of local nonprofits and improve the lives of those in need, assist people with disabilities, and support first responders through its Prime Care program. BFIT offers degrees that prepare young people for high-demand jobs in technical fields like automotive technology that need skilled workers while building the communication and problem-solving skills that come with a college degree. More than 90% of Benjamin Franklin graduates either continue right into the advanced education or enter the workforce after graduation. Benjamin Franklin's been around forever, since 1908, which really is forever. So, really, again, a really kind of interesting partnership that they would go ahead and do that and decide, well, we're going to grow our own technicians and we're going to grow them through a college program, which I thought was really, really sort of interesting, thinking a little bit differently about how they're going to do things. So I said earlier that we had I had the opportunity to road test the latest electric smart car, and I was at a New England Motor Press meeting where I'm the president of the New England Motor Press, and I had a chance to spend a few minutes with somebody from Smart Car, and I pre-recorded this, so this is pre-recorded, and if Dennis is just about ready, the question that I asked Smart Car product manager Mutakra Voss was, when Smart was first introduced, they were gas cars, but not anymore.
It's not anymore. As of model year 18, it's all electric. It's the only brand to convert completely to all electric.
And what was the thought behind that? Is it just that it's just a city car and electric makes sense for the city?
Exactly. From the very beginning, Smart has always been with the future in mind that it would go all electric. So the transformation is almost complete across the world, and it certainly is here in the U.S.
And when you look at the Smart for two, it's the cars we see here in the States are truly two-seater cars. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily the case in other parts of the world, though, right?
No, in other parts of the world, they do have a Smart 4-4.
Okay.
So, I don't know too much about that.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. And the Smart for 2 comes in some different configurations, though, right? Can you tell us about those?
Sure, yeah. I mean, one of the best things about the car is the color combinations that it comes with. There are multiple colors that are available for the body panels, mm-hmm. and then also for the Tritium safety cell that surrounds it, and then also for the grille. There are some combinations that won't work. Like, I don't think you can make a Ronald McDonald car if you wanted. But like, if you go on the Smart USA website, you can actually configure the car how you like, and you can see a color combination that works well.
And is there still a cabrio type version, a convertible version?
Yes, absolutely. We have also a cabriolet version, which is really, really nice. I mean, it's has like a three stage cabrio setup. You can put down the top at any speed, and then there are some sidebars there that you can also take out if you want to complete the cabrio experience.
And then there's a conventional hardtop, and as well as one with a gigantic sunroof, right?
Yes, we have a panoramic sunroof on as an option on our coupes.
You mentioned the safety cell. You know, people think about small cars as potentially, you know, could be unsafe, but these cars are constructed in such a way to really try to protect the passengers, right?
Absolutely. So the Tritium safety cell is an innovation that's patented by Smart, and basically it is what's essentially a roll cage that is made of high-strength and ultra-high-strength steel, reinforced in all the places that it needs to be. This car is crash tested against S classes, and it's dropped from above. And you can look at videos of crash testing that the car goes through, and it's basically comes through pretty unscathed. So definitely a huge innovation, and it's a very, very safe car.
Yeah, I remember years ago when the Smart first came out. It was, I think there was a crash with the ML or something, and surprisingly how well the car did.
Yeah. It's interesting to see those crashing. I mean, I don't like to think about what happens to the other driver or anything like that, but at least you know if you're driving a Smart that if you were involved in some horrible situation like that, that you would come out well.
Well, let's talk about the car a little bit more. The range of the car is approximately... How many miles can we go on a full charge?
The EPA estimated range is 58 miles. But if you buy it brand new and you have your eco setting on and, you know, your climate controls are optimized, then you can actually get over 70 miles.
And the recharge time on a typical level 2 style charger, how long does it take to recharge?
So it's 2.5 hours from 0 to 80 and 3 hours 0 to 100.
And... on a trickle charge, like a conventional house current, how long would it take?
So if you're measuring at 10 amps, it would be at 17 hours, 0 to 80, or 21 hours, 0 to 100, so basically overnight.
Yep.
If you have a level 1 charger that does more than 10 amps, then you can experience better charging.
Yeah. And, you know, some people think about electric cars and they go, yeah, you know, do I really want to plug a car in? But when I come home at night, I plug my tablet in, I plug my phone in.
Right.
Why don't I just plug my car in, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could set it up in your garage. So basically, where you park, you just plug it in, and it's just as easy as, like, any other routine that you have, you know.
And we're here in New England. We have this thing called winter. How does the Smart do in the snow?
Well, it is a rear-wheel drive car, so it's not all-wheel drive.
Yep.
So in the snow, it's going to act like any other rear-wheel drive car.
But is there more weight over the rear wheels than, say, a conventional car would be?
I'm not totally sure about the weight distribution, but since it's so small, the battery is also underneath the car. It has a nice low center of gravity.
I just remember, you know, going way back to the old days. You know, the original air-cooled Volkswagens, because the engine was in the back, were phenomenal because they were rear-wheel drive and the engine sat on top of the rear wheels and they did amazingly well. And I sort of envision this may do the same thing. How about things like how it performs in the city? Turning radius, I assume, is really good, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, with the Smart, it's the smallest turning radius in the industry at 22.8 feet. So just to give a point of comparison... Fiat 500, for instance, has about 31 feet turning radius. That's almost 10 feet more than what the Smart can achieve. When you're driving it, it almost feels like it's turning on itself. So it's pretty amazing.
And how about overall dimensions? Give, you know, this is radio. This is going to be radio. So overall dimensions, what kind of size is it in relation to, say, other cars or just overall dimensions?
Well, the car width feels similarly to any other car that you would drive.
Yep.
The length is 8.8 feet. So compared to, for instance, like a C-Class, which is 6.6 feet, you're just a little over 2 feet more than like what a normal car would be width-wise.
Yep.
So basically what that means is that you can do pretty interesting things as long as, you know, the, you know, city laws accommodate it, but you can back up into parallel parking spaces and you won't go very much further than like what a car would parallel park into there.
So on a spot that I would normally parallel park in, I can drive in?
As long as, you know, all the ordinances and everything are okay with it. Yeah. It's something that's always done in Europe. And it's a pretty cool sight to see, and you can fit multiple Smarts in one spot in that case.
And compared to a Fiat 500, they're huge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
You use that for a comparison. But, no, it sounds like it's a car that certainly meets a need for certain people looking for a certain kind of car. And a lot of times people think about electric cars as being $40,000, $50,000. I was looking at some of the Monroney stickers on here and... 26,000, 28,000 in that range.
Yeah,
right?
if it's loaded up, it can be there before you account for any incentives.
Yep.
The coupe starts at 23.9, so if you're applying all the incentives, your real world kind of costs associated with it would be in the mid-teens starting. And, yep. Of course, if you load up options, yep. it'll be a little bit more than
so
that.
So there's a $7,500 federal tax credit?
$7,500 yep. additional federal yep. tax credit.
So you take that, providing you can take that deduction, I suppose, you take that off the top of the car, and it's, it has to be one of the more inexpensive cars on the market.
Oh, yeah. It's the most affordable electric car yep. on the market.
Yep.
And it's also, with the Cabrio, it's the only electric Cabrio that you can buy.
Sounds pretty fun. And I'm 6 feet tall, and I fit in it comfortably. I was in it with somebody else who's about my height, and the both of us were pretty comfortable in the front seats, and of course that's all the seats there are.
So. I mean, that's why I would suggest that if anybody were interested, they should definitely get inside and drive it around,
yeah.
because inside, as you know, it,
yeah.
it feels like you're driving a regular car.
Right.
In fact, when you're driving amongst traffic and everything, you don't realize how much space you don't have, like, kind of behind you.
Yeah.
So you're still looking at your blind spots like you need, like, this extra space
yeah.
that you would need in, like, a regular
yeah.
car, but you actually have a lot of space.
Yeah, when we were backing up the car, you said, no, you can go back about another 10 feet. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's what it felt like. No, thanks. It was a fun little ride, and thanks for your time.
Thank you.
All right.
So I hope you learned a little bit about the smart car, and... And it was actually a pretty interesting car, I have to admit. It's also so small. When you actually go to drive it, if you need to make a U-turn, the thing is only 8.5 feet long, I think. And it feels, when you're driving it, because the there's only front seats, but it feels really open inside. And, of course, it has this safety shell around it where it's, there's a bunch of videos showing them smashing into SUVs, and they stand up really, really well. But when you do a U-turn with it, it almost feels like it spins around in its own length. It's so small. But most people said, oh, I don't think I could ever drive one. I'd feel so intimidated by it. But actually going down the road, it didn't feel that way at all. Where it seems to have its limitations is in range. So it would be fine for someone who commutes short distances. The range is pretty limited. It's under 70 miles or so. So for a commuter like Dennis, who doesn't really commute, it'd be perfect.
Not at all.
But for someone who maybe, you know, did commute, you know, 5 or 6 miles each way back and forth to work, or maybe 30 or 40 miles even back and forth to work, but they had some place to plug in at the other end and recharge, it works out pretty well. But it's, for a lot of people, it'd be an ideal second car. Of course, the downside is there isn't a lot of cargo space either. So great for running to the supermarket. You could easily put, I think, 8 or 10 bags of groceries in the back of it. It's interesting that it has a fold-down tailgate, so you actually could go tailgating and have some place to sit. Also interesting is all the body panels are plastic with color that goes all the way through them. So if somebody scratched your car, you don't really notice so much because the color goes right through. The hood, the little tiny hood on the front, you release two latches, and the hood falls forward, and there's just a couple of straps that hold it in place. It's really kind of a unique little car, and it is certainly the most inexpensive electric car on the market. Of course, it does have its limitations. Why don't we take a break, pay some bills? My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. If you would like to join us, our phone number is 617-770-3030. We'll be right back.
I get around, bus dropping up and down the same old strip. I gotta find a new place where the kids are hip.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Austin. My name's John Paul, the Car Doctor, here to help you with your car problems, like I've been doing on the station for, I don't know, going on 12 years, I guess, and doing this for quite a while in a previous station, too. So hopefully still can help you with your problems, and, you know, we still have the ability to look things up and do things and see what's going on. Our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617 770-330-3030. Let's talk to Skippy. Skippy, is that you?
Yes, sir.
What can we do for you this morning?
Listen, I have a question for you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Enlighten me on the benefits of synthetic oil versus regular oil, please.
Sure. Synthetic oil tends to lubricate quicker, so it does, it gets to the places where it needs to be quicker. Flows better in cold weather. It doesn't tend to break down in heat the same way conventional oil does. The downside is it's twice as expensive, and still you can't exceed the oil change recommendation. So in other words, if your car says to change the oil at 5,000 miles with regular oil, putting conventional oil in doesn't mean you can go, you know, a year or 10,000 miles. You still need to change your oil when you need to change your oil. But it does lubricate a little bit better. I did some very non-scientific tests years back, same car, conventional oil, regular oil, and I found that with the conventional oil in it, when you crank the engine over, it would take slightly less amperage to crank the engine over with the synthetic oil, which meant it was more slippery. And I also noticed the engine temperature dropped just a little bit, maybe a few degrees. So the engine wasn't quite getting as hot. It cranked the engine over a little bit quicker. And overall, I thought there was a benefit. If you've listened to this program for a while, you know that I can be sort of cheap with some things. On my own cars, as they were both of our previous cars, I would change the oil on them myself. And I ended up going to Walmart brand synthetic oil. It was made by, at the time, it was made by Shell. I found it to be a good quality oil, and it was about the same price as conventional oil. So I could do a synthetic oil change with a decent filter. And a lot of times on my old Hyundai, I would go out and buy the Hyundai filters because they weren't that expensive. So I'd use the factory filter. I'd use the synthetic oil from Walmart, and I'd get an oil change done for under $25. That is not the case sometimes if you go into an oil change place. I just got an advertisement for one of our cars in the mail the other day, and I think they were having a sale on conventional oil changes at 30, and I think synthetic was 70 something. So you have to decide whether it makes sense, you know, financially, and it also depends on your car. You know, some of the performance cars, Corvettes and Porsche 911s, they come factory with Mobil 1 synthetic oil in them because they believe they have enough confidence in that oil that it's going to help protect the car against, you know, overheating issues and other things that oil can help with. So oil's very important to making sure the car runs at the right temperature. A lot of people don't realize that oil probably contributes, you know, more than 25% to engine cooling. So if you don't change the oil often enough, or you run with low oil in it, you can run into some serious mechanical problems due to overheating. So the molecules in synthetic oil are all uniform. Molecules in conventional oil are all different sizes, and that's why synthetic oil tends to pump up quicker, lubricate better, especially in cold weather. If you have a car that starts up a little bit hard in cold weather, cranks over a little bit slow, synthetic oil sometimes can even make a little bit of difference with that.
Well, okay, so basically what you're saying is, pay me now or pay me later. It's better to spend the extra money on the synthetic oil, and you'll probably have a higher percentage of less problems.
Yeah, I think that's the case. In fact, our old Hyundai, when we had it, it probably only went about 8,000 miles a year. So with conventional oil, I would change it twice a year. With the synthetic oil, though, because it just barely exceeded the factory oil change interval, I would check it every month or so, but I would keep it in there for what probably amounted to about 11 months. So technically, because I was running the oil to the maximum oil change interval, it was actually saving me money, if you think of it, over the long run, because rather than do the oil change twice a year, I was doing it, you know, probably twice every 3 years, or twice every 2 years. So And if you multiply that out, it worked out. So, okay, every 5 years, I was probably it was probably saving the equivalent of a couple of oil changes. So it really depends. You're right. It's sort of like pay me now, pay me later, I guess, is a good way to think about it.
That's great, because it's basically don't be stingy now. And I tell you, I'd rather pay the extra money now than have the problems later. Someone told me about it, and I don't know if that's a big jump, but they say, hey, listen.
Well,
the whole thing like that.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you when I was always a Mr. No Synthetic. You know, why do you need to do it? Regular oil's good enough. It's been good enough for 100 years. Why do you need to put synthetic oil in? And a regular contributor to this program and shop owner Junior D'Amato said to me, you know, synthetic oil's the way to go. It's the way to go. And one day I was at an event, and I won a case of synthetic oil. So I'm like, huh. So I put it in my, at the time, my wife's old Volkswagen. And I said to her, did you notice any difference with the synthetic oil? It was Royal Purple oil, which is a high-quality synthetic oil. And I put it in the car, and she said, you know, in the cold weather, it does seem to start up a little bit better, and the engine's quieter when it starts up. It doesn't have, you know, a little bit of, you know, typical cold engine noise. It seems to start up quieter and starts up a little quicker. So even just based on that, I said, you know, maybe there is something to the synthetic oil. Because I was Mr., you know, change your oil every 2,500, 3,000 miles guy, and that's what I would recommend to people. But, you know, as oil got better, oil filters got better, getting rid of carburetors was the best thing that ever happened with oil, because you don't dilute the oil with extra fuel from having a choke stick on too long. So synthetic oil in newer cars, to me, just makes sense.
So would you say like 3,000 miles, maybe 3,500 miles, would that be the average to change your oil?
That's always been the average for conventional oil. But like I said, with synthetic oil, look in the owner's manual. If it says change the oil every 5,000, 7,500, I'm okay with that. It's funny. I was just talking to somebody the other day that said, you can't do that. You can't do that. And I said, you know, if the manufacturer says you can do it, and you follow the owner's manual, and especially if it's a car that's under warranty and something did happen, you could go back to them and say, I changed the oil just like you told me. And if there's a problem, they got to take care of it because you followed the maintenance. So look in the owner's manual, see what it says, and change the oil, you know, somewhere in that range somewhere. You know, you don't doing it every 3,000 miles is... unless you only drive 3,000 miles a year, is a waste of money.
Well, I'll tell you, you convinced me, sir. Thank you very
much. All right, take care, Skippy. Our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. I believe we have our buddy Rick on the phone. Rick, is that you?
Yeah, that's me.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, I'm getting ready to take a 400 or 500 mile trip. I've actually just left the house, but I pulled over to give you a call, and that a suggestion for people that are getting ready to make road trips is that go by your garage and have your car checked out just to make sure that everything's okay before you get on the road.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, and that you know my wife went one direction, I'm headed in another, and I had both cars in to see a mechanic this week. And you were talking about smart cars. I pulled up alongside one on my motorcycle yesterday, and my bike was almost bigger than the smart car.
Well, it probably was, because they're 8.5 feet or 8.8 inches long. And what they were saying was, in Europe, in a normal parallel parking space, providing there's no law against it, they actually drive them head in, because a truck with mirrors can be 8.5 feet wide. So a smart car is just about that size. So you pull it straight into the parking spot. So, you know, the front wheels are up against the curb. All of a sudden, you're taking up, you know, one car is taking up, or three smart cars can fit into one normal parking space.
Yeah. I think that if you tried that over here in Boston, the police would say, Boston driver.
Yeah, probably, or else a bunch of kids would try to pick it up and move it.
Yep. So.
Yeah.
Well, John, you've been with AAA so long. I'm tempted to ask you, how many people did AAA employ when they first started out?
Well, in 1902, I don't know, but I know the but I know the office that I work in right now, and I used to work over in our Rockland office, and we had 350 parking spots, and we took up most of them. Then we moved our headquarters building down to Providence, Rhode Island, and the parking lot held 550 employees, and we ran out of parking spots. We bought another chunk of land so we could park more cars for more employees. Then we bought another building right down the street where we have our insurance company now, and we moved all the insurance people down the street, and still Friday afternoon after I got done doing a program somewhere, I still had problems trying to find a place to park. So just in our club itself, AAA Northeast, which is our AAA club, which incorporates Massachusetts, all except Springfield, Rhode Island, half of Connecticut, part of New Jersey, and the middle part of New York, employs about 3,500 people now.
Well, I'm surprised at that many. That's, you know, even your office, you know, when you're saying how many parking spots you needed, I'm going like, wow.
Yeah, and we're looking for help. So if you know anybody that wants to become a tow truck driver, a battery service driver, or you know, work in one of our offices, tell them to go to AAA.com and fill out an application.
Anyway, I will if I know anybody, but leave me out. I'm done working.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm jealous. You know, I'm jealous. I got a few more years left.
Well, John, you know, it's a big change when you retire. You don't realize how big a psychological, emotional change it is until you go through it.
Well, every time I go and talk to a group of, like, retired, you know, I've talked to a couple of retired men's clubs groups lately, and they all tell me, you just know when it's time. You come in and you go, you know what? I think I'm done. And most everybody I've talked to, their blood pressure goes down.
That's good. But also, you know, have something, you know, lined up for you to do to keep yourself busy when you do retire. Because you need to be able to get out of the house and be productive, or else you sit there like, what am I worth for now?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that, and you probably end up, you know, the wife you've known for a lot of years all of a sudden becomes annoying.
I think she found me annoying.
Well, exactly. Same thing. Either way.
Yeah.
Either way. Hey, Rick, thanks for the call.
Okay.
And yeah, you too. Yeah, really good advice. If you are heading out somewhere, you're planning a trip, go to your trusted repair shop. Have them give the vehicle a look over. You know, 400 or 500 miles isn't a big trip. A lot of people do that over the course of a week. But still, if you're heading out, you know, you don't want to be on the road and your brakes were great, you know, 200 miles ago, but all of a sudden the pads were just about down to nothing. You hit the brakes and you hear a scraping sound. Or you look under it and there's an exhaust bracket that's about ready to rot off, even though the exhaust is in good shape. And all of a sudden now your exhaust is hanging and banging and doing all kinds of things. Or the engine coolant is just dirty and, you know, good idea to change it and change the thermostat. Looking at the tires, you get a good look at the tires on the outside. But, you know, how are they doing on the inside, under the car, where you can't see them? Is there a bubble or a break or a crack somewhere? So it always makes a lot of sense, you know, looking at the battery to see what kind of shape it's in. Again, always good sense to do it. I wanted to talk about the car that got me around the end of last week, at least, and that is the Hyundai Kona. The Kona is the latest subcompact SUV from Hyundai. It comes in four trim levels, SE, SEL, Limited, and Ultimate. There is also a Kona Electric, which is a completely separate vehicle. All the models except the Electric are offered in front-wheel or all-wheel drive. Power supplied by a base 2-liter four-cylinder engine that develops 147 horsepower, or an optional 1.6-liter turbocharged engine that makes a little bit more horsepower, 175. Our road test was in the fully loaded Ultimate Trim Edition with all-wheel drive. On the road, the 175-horsepower turbocharged engine provides strong acceleration. The engine does get a bit raucous when pushed hard, but is otherwise fairly quiet. The 7-speed dual-clutch transmission shifted smoothly, and certainly as well as any in recent memory. In fact, it shifted so smoothly, I thought it was a conventional automatic rather than an automatic shifting manual. The ride is smooth and the handling is nimble and predictable on the road. The cabin stays quiet with a minimal amount of road and wind noise. Fuel economy with my time behind the wheel averaged about 31 miles per gallon and actually went up from there a bit. Our road test Kona was loaded with the latest safety technology, head-up display, a handy feature that allows drivers to stay a little bit more focused, navigation commands and so forth come up on the display, lane departure warning, driver attention warning, kept telling me I needed to take a break, lane centering, rounding out the technology package, the lane keeping assistance. Technology helps keep the vehicle in the lane even when the driver's hands are not on the wheel. Don't drive with your hands off the wheel, by the way. Included in the package were forward collision assistance with pedestrian detection. Creature comforts included keyless push button starting, heated seats, rain sensing wipers. Again, this is a fully loaded little car. LED headlights and taillights and a decent sized sunroof. The front seats are comfortable and supportive. The combination of 8-way power driver's seat and telescoping steering wheel should... just about anybody should be comfortable in it. Visibility is good with minimal blind spots. Controls are straightforward, easy to use. The infotainment system is less distracting than some. It also comes with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, so you can hook your smartphone up. Rear seats can accommodate adults with reasonable comfort, although tall passengers will find the headroom a little bit tight. Storage with the seats in use for a subcompact was actually not bad. Fold down the rear seats, and there's about 48 cubic feet of space in there. I actually put a little bookshelf back there. The Hyundai Kona is a practical compact sedan that's easy to drive and gets good fuel and mileage. If you're looking for to downsize from a large SUV or looking for a small practical all-weather vehicle, the Kona by Hyundai is a pretty good choice. 26 city, 29 highway. I was way over the highway mileage. Powered by a 4-cylinder turbocharged engine. This fully loaded one, almost $30,000, but that is fully loaded. They start way less than that, so just to be aware. 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. I think we had Ken from Topsfield on the phone. Ken, are you still there?
I am.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, sir. Let me turn this off so I don't listen to you. Okay. I have a question. I'm thinking of getting rid of a car that I have. I'm an autoholic. I have too many.
All right.
And it's a 1995 Lexus LS400.
Okay.
Beautiful car. Never had one. I got it at 48,000 miles from a friend. And, you know, it was beautiful. Well, I've kept it that way. I've had it about 15 years maybe. And I've got it just turned 100,000. Drive it on long trips only, a few times a year. It's a great long-distance car.
Mm-hmm.
And keep it covered, and I baby it, and it looks really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked in Kelly Blue Book, I don't know, a few months ago, just perusing.
Mm-hmm.
Said it was worth around maybe, I don't know, a couple of grand or something.
Really?
Yeah, like 2,500 or something. And I remember looking for my daughter for a car a few years ago, and, you know, 8 or 10-year-old CRVs with 180,000, they were getting 6,000-7,000, and I'm
oh,
not,
yeah,
you know, big bucks, because I understand, but it's a damn good car, and I don't know what to list it for. In my mind, I keep it covered, put a trickle charger in. As a matter of fact, the person who gets it, whenever I sell it, you know, it's got 4 snow tires on rims. I bought rims,
yeah,
and I found them in another part of the country. They were better than the original. They came from down south.
Now, what year is it?
It's a 1995 Lexus LS400. Great. You know what? I'll tell you, the Lexus is a big car, that LS.
Yep.
It's great on the highway. I mean, you just float along at whatever. And it's got a small V8 in it. And, you know, it's a good car. It is a new, but it's pretty good, if I say so.
Well, I'll step up and give you $500 for it right now, you know.
You're a hell of a guy. I don't care what your wife says.
You know, right now, I was just looking at iccars.com. Right now, there is a dealer somewhere. I don't know where this is. But it's in Quincy. And they have a 1995 LS 400. It has 129,000 miles on it, and they're looking for $54,57 for it. And they reduced the price from $79.95. So, you know, I don't know how long. Let's look a little bit further.
So in other words, I could, 5,000 wouldn't be unreasonable for a good car.
I don't think so. I mean, there isn't a lot, you know, and I'm trying to stay right with the you know, as close as I can get to exact year. But there's only in across the country, there are only maybe a dozen of these that seem to be listed for sale. Most of all the ones I'm looking at, like there's one in Raleigh, North Carolina right now that has 119,000 miles on it. They're looking for $6,900. But then again, there's also one in Maryland that's got 155,000 on it, but they're only looking for a couple grand for it. There's another one in Alabama for $6,000. There's another one in Washington State for about $7,000. There's a Dreamer in Georgia is looking for $11,000 for one. But it looks like the realistic price is somewhere between, you know, there are some that are, you know, kind of sketchy, but there's one in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It's got 200,000 miles on it. They're looking for $4,000. There's another one in Melbourne, Florida. So, you know, nice Florida car with 158,000. They're looking for $7,000. So I would think between $5,000 and $6,000 is, you know, for you know, somebody who's willing to take a chance, it'd be a great car.
All right, thank you. I just wanted, you know, it's funny. When I got it, I loved it so much because I could never afford a car like that. That's like top of the line.
Yep.
You know, I got the service manuals. I sent away and bought the two service manuals. Not the car.
Yeah.
I like
no.
To have stuff on the car. So, I think, you know, in my mind, I could, you know, I'm amazed just talking in general, sir, about cars that. Cars with 150 and 200,000 miles, and we know cars go that distance, no problem nowadays. Even the old cars, if they were a good engine and you took care of them, they'd go that long.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Now they ask huge bucks for old cars.
No, and you know, it's not like this is a, you know, it's not like it's an old Saab that, you know, you're going to run into problems with. It's an old Lexus that, you know, Lexus, Toyota builds good quality stuff, and you expect them to last a long time. And like you said, big, comfortable car that you've babied, you've taken care of, I think would be an ideal second car for somebody. You know, if to be honest with you, if I was ready for a used car in my you know, as something like that, it would be a great car for me too. You know, because I, you know, you take care of it, you baby it, you only use it for certain things. It's not like you get driven every day. And even though it's 22 years old, it sounds like a real solid car for somebody. So again, you know, Ken. So if you want to take my $500, I'll take a chance on it right now. So.
All right, I'll have my people
you'll
call
have,
you up.
Yeah, have,
we'll
yeah,
do lunch.
Yeah, good idea. All right, I'll include.
Thank
you
for-
know. I'll include lunch in that $500, so, you know, so you get a little something extra. That's how we are. All right, why don't we take a break? My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. You're listening on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. We'll be right back.
Baby, I got no gas. Oh, yeah. New red Corvette. Baby, your mind's too fast.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. If you would like to join us, 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030, phone lines are open. We did a survey and a news release the other day about advanced driver assistance systems, and similar to the Hyundai Kona that had all that technology in it. And what we found out is most people don't fully understand how they work. In fact, Either they rely too heavily on them, or they don't know how they work at all. The good news is, if installed on all vehicles, advanced driver assistance systems can potentially prevent more than 2.7 million crashes, so almost 3 million crashes, and probably about 1 million injuries and, you know, almost 10,000 deaths. So if every car had them, which they're not going to, because the average car on the road is almost 12 years old, so even if it was original equipment and factory equipment, no charge, in every new vehicle, it would take about 12 years before the whole fleet turned over and everybody had them. So the bad news is many drivers don't really know how they work and the safety limitations. And part of that has to do with the vehicle manufacturers. There are self-driving, which isn't really self-driving, but semi-autonomous driving where you can take your hands off the wheel for a minute, like the Hyundai Kona had, like Mercedes has, like Volvo has, like several other car manufacturers have. There is, I heard the other day, 18 different names for that type of system. So when you have 18, and they're different names within the same brand of vehicle sometimes. So how's a consumer supposed to really know? So before new car buyers leave the lot, they should sit with the salesperson and really try to learn as much as they can about the car. The owner's manual of every car is usually the best-looking part in a junkyard. It's the part that very seldomly ever comes out of the glove compartment, even if it has an owner's manual. Some cars don't today. It's built into the navigation infotainment system. But it seems as if, in some cases, the salesperson spends more time telling you how to hook up your cell phone to the car than they do telling you about things like if you're not paying attention, you'll get an alert and a warning will come up on the dash and tell you to step on the brake, and in some cases may slow the car down for you. In some cases may even, depending on the car, may actually bring the car to a complete stop. So salespeople should spend a little more time on that.
Can I jump in on this for a second?
Sure.
So I saw, I think it was for Nissan. It's kind of the advertising fault too, because the one commercial that I saw was, you literally put on the driver, they're talking about, oh, we all get stuck in rush hour traffic and this, that, and the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they literally showed the person put on the driver assist safety program, whatever it is.
ProPilot.
Take their feet off the pedals and off the steering wheel and sit back, and showed the car moving and stopping on its own.
That works perfectly until it doesn't. And that's the problem. If somebody cuts in front of you and the system's not working just the way it should, or if it's raining or snowing, and it starts to rain or snow, the system's going to shut off. If you're in stop-and-go traffic, it's depending on how long the car stops. So it may actually speed up, slow down. But if it stops for more than, say, a minute or so, the system disables itself, and you actually have to hit, like, the resume button on the cruise control or step on the gas again to get it to work. So the idea that you're going to be able to be, you know, you're going into Boston Monday morning and traffic's all backed up, and you're going to be able to push the button, take your feet off the gas pedal, take your hands off the wheel, and take a little nap in between, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, but that's the way they portray it.
I know they do.
And I'm sure in all that little wording that comes up in the white writing that you can't really see that lasts for like a second, it says that in there?
I'm sure it does.
But again, there's no truth in advertising, and I think that is the biggest
issue. I agree. And that's part of the problem, but you know, like blind spot monitor systems work pretty good. But when we did a survey, nearly 80% of drivers whose vehicles had blind spot monitoring believed it could detect bicycles, pedestrians, and vehicles passing at high speed. But what we found out when we tested them, a lot of those systems wouldn't catch a motorcycle going by. It wouldn't catch a pedestrian walking. You know, if you're stuck in traffic and you go to change lanes and there's somebody who's decided for whatever reason to walk in the middle of the road, it may not see them. So, but some people think, oh yeah, that's how it's going to work. In fact, I was talking to somebody who said, oh yeah, I know when I go to change lanes and I see the little light come on in the mirror, that tells me I can change lanes. And I said, no, that's telling you somebody's in your blind spot. They're like, yeah, but it doesn't always beep when I go to change lanes like that. I thought it only told you, it only beeped when somebody was in your blind spot. And I'm like, no. It's telling you somebody's there. If somebody wasn't there, it would not come on at all. And if you went to change lanes and it beeped, the beeping is just a better reminder of, hey, watch out, somebody's back there. So, yeah, people don't fully understand it.
Yeah, so in my car, it has those, the lights and stuff, and the lights are always coming on and coming off. So after a while, human nature is, oh, well, I'm just going to ignore that now because it's always doing something.
Yeah.
When I turn on my blinker, that's when it'll beep at me if there's somebody there.
Right. Right.
And
so
they also don't pick up when people, like, especially on the highway, when people are in the next lane that are next to you. And, you know, those moments where both of you are going for the same spot in the in the next lane, doesn't pick up those.
Yep. No, and that's the problem. It's when we did testing out in California, I forget what kind of car it was. We'll say it was a GM, but I don't remember. And it was we were going 40 miles an hour. And then we slowed down to like 10 miles an hour, and we had a decent-sized motorcycle ride by at about 5 miles an hour faster, and it caught it. Then we did it at 40 miles an hour, had the motorcycle pass at 50 miles an hour. So not unreasonably fast speed. It missed the motorcycle almost every time. So the systems don't work as good as people would hope they do. And then again, it's all the different terminology. That Hyundai that I was driving had just about everything in it, but there's adaptive cruise control, which sets the pace of the car in front of you. There's blind spot monitoring, which we were just talking about. There's forward collision warning, which uses kind of a radar system to let you know if something's going on in front of you. And then there's automatic emergency braking that will actually take corrective action, but sometimes it only slows the car, other times it completely stops the car, and that system doesn't fully work as well as it should. I was driving a Chrysler product one day, and a car in front of me went to take a right-hand turn. It got about halfway around the turn, and it came to a stop. Well, most of us would just jog the wheel a little to the left, go around the back of the car, and keep on going straight and think nothing of it. The car that I was driving fully applied the brakes, and all of a sudden it was like, nope, came to a stop, and I'm like, I didn't plan it to do that. Well, the system thought I was going to run into this car that had started to take a turn and came to a stop. I wasn't prepared for that. So there are systems that they're all in the process. They're not as good as they should be, and people don't understand them as much, and some people take them too much for granted. Other people don't trust them. So there's going to be some learning curves. You know, lane keeping assistant warns you when you move out of the lane. Rear cross traffic alert is one of the ones I actually like, and like the way it works a lot. That's where if you're in a vehicle and you're stuck between two SUVs, for instance, and you're trying to back out of a parking space and you can't see, it actually sends a radar signal, for want of a better word, up and down the lane of the parking lot, and it can detect if there's a car coming. They seem to be pretty accurate, so they seem to work pretty well for that. So, you know, something worth looking at. You know, if you are going out to buy a new car, our latest new car has none of this technology in it. And it was funny, when I was talking to somebody about it, they said, well, you probably got all the technology in the car because you're a traffic safety guy. And I said, no, I didn't actually. And part of it was price. I had a certain budget in mind, and the budget didn't hit where I wanted it to for the technology, and I'm okay with that, because a car that I drive every day, if it has that technology, that's great. As I'm getting older, maybe that technology is good to have, but we'll wait and see. Maybe I made a mistake. Maybe there'll be a used car for sale in my future. Who knows? Dennis, this one's for you. Musicians who sing the most about cars. What they call the rock genre, who would you think is the musician that sings more about cars than anybody else? And I don't know if I call this completely rock, but...
Then I have no idea, but Bobby Brooks here is thinking really hard. The Cars from Boston is what Bobby says, but no, I know that's wrong.
It's actually Bruce Springsteen.
Oh no, that makes sense. And yeah, he's definitely rock. He's definitely a rock guy.
Yeah. And In the countryside, who do you think?
Oh, my God. I have no idea in country.
Oh, come on. Legendary country guy. We play his music.
The Man in Black there.
Johnny Cash.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I want to ask you about folk.
Oh, God. Willie Nelson. But he's country. He's country folk.
Yeah, he's country. Yeah. Yeah. Punk?
Punk? No idea.
Yeah, Iggy Pop.
Oh, no, yeah. that makes sense. Yeah, yeah, because he was on a song with Rob Zombie about a car called Black Sunshine.
All right, and in hip hop, because I know you're a big hip hop fan.
Oh yeah, huge hip hop fan. Right, Jay-Z.
Number two.
Oh, dang,
you just missed it by one. Lil Wayne.
Oh no, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And then under Jay-Z, Snoop Dogg.
Okay. I wouldn't have put Snoop Dogg high on that list.
And then under them, people I don't know.
Okay.
So, yeah. And oddly enough, in the pop genre, the Beach Boys got beat out by Weird Al Yankovic.
Weird Al has references to cars in almost every single song he does.
Yeah. And Weird Al got beat out by Elton John, who got beat out by Prince, who, oddly enough, got beat out by Jimmy Buffett.
Jimmy Buffett doesn't surprise me. And in country, I almost put in, I was going to say Jimmy Buffett.
Well, Jimmy Buffett is could be country, could be pop, could be...
He's a jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah, well...
He doesn't do metal.
Hopefully not. I saw an interview about him once on, not that this has anything to do with cars, but I saw an interview about him once, and he said, yeah, I'm not a good singer. I'm not a good guitar player. I'm a pretty good band leader. So, you know.
That's what I would put him at.
Yeah, yeah, so. Anyway, but, yeah, this came from the people at Gold Eagle, the people that sell products like Stabil, which if you're putting your lawnmower away soon, you might want to add some Stabil to the gas because it keeps the gas from going bad. It keeps it from getting all gooey. It keeps the carburetor working the way it should. People have mixed feelings. Do you run the gas tank dry in your lawnmower and last winter in your snowblower? Do you add Stabil and run the carburetor dry? What do you do? I tend to just add the Stabil, run it for a while until it all mixes in and leave it alone. And I've been doing that with some old crummy lawnmower that I've had for years and have not had a problem with it, and seems to work just fine. Snowblower, I add some stuff to it. The only thing with the snowblower is in cold weather, gasoline can get a little finicky, so you have to look at that. There is also a Stabil product called 360 now, which is supposed to help prevent corrosion inside the gas tank as well. I tend to use Stabil for marine purposes because we have ethanol in our gas around here, and the marine Stabil is more designed to work with ethanol. So this weird little survey came from the folks at Gold Eagle. So I guess it did just what they wanted it to do. We talked about car references, then I talked about Gold Eagle. So I guess it works. So there's a lot of that around there. So. Our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Honda this week announced that it would invest $2.75 billion over the next 12 years in Cruise, the General Motors self-driving operation, speaking of self-driving. Initially, Honda will pump $750 million into Cruise in exchange for 5.7% of GM's autonomous vehicle development arm. The investment gives Honda access to advanced self-driving car technology. Honda hasn't been doing much in the self-driving car technology side. Cruise said earlier this year that in 2019, it will launch a self-driving ride-hailing service, so Uber, Lyft, in level 5 autonomous vehicles that don't have steering wheels or pedals. I kind of wonder how they're going to do that, because right now I believe current legislation says that if you have a car, it's got to have a steering wheel. There is actually an autonomous vehicle, I'm going to call it a summit, but that's the wrong word, that AAA is putting together for next Friday down in Connecticut. And they're having Senator Blumenthal is going to be there as one of the as I guess one of the opening speakers, and there's going to be a interesting variety of folks there, and that's going to be taking place at UConn in Stamford in the auditorium. And there is going to be John Nielsen from AAA is going to be there. There's a guy who used to work for AAA that now works for a company called Inrix. There's an attorney on a panel, and I'm moderating that panel, so I know what they have coming up. So it should be pretty interesting, along with some of the others. I'm interested to see if they think there should be a national legislation that helps determine, you know, what's going on state to state, because autonomous vehicles, they're coming, whether people want them or not. I think they're coming. Interesting that Honda is going to spend $2.7 billion over the next 12 years on technology that most consumers don't really want right now. But, well, we'll have to see what's going on. Honda's a pretty smart company. Honda's investment values Cruise at about $14.6 billion, significantly more than the SoftBank Vision announced its own plans to pump in $2.5 billion in Cruise back in May. GM acquired Cruise Automation as the company was called in its Silicon Valley startups in May 2017. Honda on Wednesday said it would invest $2.75 billion over the next 12 years. It's a lot of money. We'll have to wait and see. The investment gives Honda access, like I said, to all of the self-driving technology. So we'll have to wait and see. Speaking of GM, do you own a Cadillac? A 2014 to 2016 Cadillac CTS. Well, it's going to be recalled. GM said in government filings there is a issue with the seat heaters if they're activated without an occupant in place. So in other words, if you have a remote start system engaged, the automaker said that high electrical resistance could lead to the seat heater pad beneath the vehicle's upholstery overheating. So right now there aren't parts available. The automaker said in the interim, GM instructed its dealers to deactivate the automatic operation of the heated seats during cold ambient temperatures when the remote start is used. The recall stems from the 2015 CTS that caught fire after being remotely started in April. GM and NHTSA investigate the fire and determine it came from a heated seat pad that was turned on automatically due to cold weather. So you want to go out and warm up your car. I don't think you had any plans on starting it on fire. But, something to be concerned about if you own one of those cars. There's another recall in the news, and it's about a rear-view camera system installed on nearly a quarter of a million Honda sedans that might not do what it's supposed to, so the automaker is recalling them. The recall applies to 2018 Honda Accord sedans and 2019 Honda Insight hybrid sedans. Both models offer a rear-view camera system as a standard equipment, but the feature is different across versions of the vehicle's screen size, for instance, so not every trim is subject to the recall. As part of the issue, the faulty rear-view camera systems may not display at all, and navigation and infotainment features, the heads-up display, and even the Bluetooth systems may fail to operate correctly. Honda said the government filing that it was first alerted to this issue in November when four Honda Accord owners brought their vehicles to service to dealers for warranty work over the rearview cameras that failed to activate after watching for other vehicles with faulty rearview cameras. Panasonic and the automotive supplier that built the system for Honda was able to duplicate the issue in April. Panasonic delivered a fix to Honda in July, and the automaker approved the software update. The automaker said it's not aware of any crashes or injuries because rearview camera systems are mandatory on cars built after 2018 model years. The recall falls under the federal safety purview. So if you have one of those, it looks like it's been recalled. 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. 770-3030. Let's talk to our buddy Robert from Tingsboro. Robert? I know you're there.
Hello.
Hey, there you are.
Good morning. Yeah, sorry, I was distracted. I have a question about exhaust manifolds on the Chrysler products, in particular the Hemi.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at something on YouTube, and, you know, you can't always believe all that stuff, but some guy claiming that this premature failure of the exhaust manifold bolts you have any knowledge, or is it an epidemic?
I don't think it's an epidemic. I mean, it's entirely possible. And did they say what kind of years they were on? I mean, because now the Hemi's been out for twenty years. So
it's the later model ones, and I mean, his particular vehicle was a Ram, but I mean, it could be any of the Chrysler products with the same.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you know, if it was a, you know, pick something, you know, a 2002. You know, Ram or something, you know, some Chrysler product with a Hemi in it. You know, is that old enough that if it did break, you kind of say, "Hey, look, you know, you know, it's an old truck," and you know, because they, you know, they had, you know, I'm trying to think how far the Ram went back. It went, you know.
Well, this guy was talking about, I guess he said several truck. He likes the truck.
Yeah.
He had a 2009. He's had a 2014. But I guess at 80 or 90,000 is when he claimed they start fatigued.
Well, and they could, I suppose. But I haven't. I'll say for a fact, but I don't know if that's the real right term. But I haven't seen any like technical service bulletins pop up that made me think that, you know, maybe there's something to that. You know, is he experiencing? Well, I'm sure across the country, maybe that is the case. But it's always worth looking at. There's they did come out with a. Let's see. What's it say here? Picked one. The service bulletin is being released. Blah 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 blah. It involves replacing exhaust manifold bolts. So I did find a bulletin. So I did. I guess I did miss it. And it's bolts on only cylinders 7 and 8, and they actually put a stainless steel high strength bolt in. So they actually did replace the bolt. And what happens is you'd hear it when it was cold, because when it's cold, the manifold shrinks enough where you get a little bit of a ticking exhaust leak. And it says you know, remove the studs and bolts for the exhaust manifold on cylinders 7 and 8. And it says, in fact, it says only you only remove the bolts themselves. If you have to take the manifolds off, you only put the gaskets in. Only if you have to take the manifolds off. So it sounds like if you can take the stud out and replace it with a stainless steel stud, and you're all set. It doesn't sound like a huge job to be able to fix it. So I guess if he's pulling the manifold out, replacing the bolt with the same bolt, well, it's going to break again. So, put a high strength stainless steel bolt in. Stainless steel won't rust, and it's a stronger bolt, so it won't break.
Yeah, if you have time. Yeah, the video he showed, he actually took the manifold off.
Yeah.
Now, there's a gasket, it looks like kind of an aluminum or thin metal. He didn't change that. He put the same one back in. The same with the Y pipe at the end of the manifold. I didn't see him change any gaskets there. They just stuck it in. And he used the original equipment, Mopar. He just bought a whole bunch of them. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. So if you're taking the bolts out and you're putting the same bolts back in, you can expect the bolts to break again.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. So use the new ones that belong there, and that was. That bulletin, actually, that bulletin was issued a bunch of years ago. So, well, 2011 is when the bulletin was issued. So, so it makes sense to, you know, and it looks like, you know, and what they probably did, and I guess it makes sense to do it. You know, if you looked at it and you didn't know any better, you'd go, well, I'm going to change all the bolts because it makes sense to do it, when in fact it's really just cylinder 7 and 8. So.
I didn't know that. And it wasn't under a recall or a warranty.
No,
it was beyond warranty.
It says reimbursable within the provisions of the warranty. So you know, if you were in the warranty, you'd get it done. You know, to replace just the bolts, you're looking at, you know, an hour and a half. If you have to pull the manifold off because the bolts were broken, you know, it's about 2.5 hours worth of work. So, you know, it's not an easy job, but it's one that, You know, it's one that I guess it. Yeah, even a 2009 truck. You know, it's 8 years old. I wouldn't expect a manifold bolt to break at 8 years old, or 9 years old. Do the math. But at 9 years old, I wouldn't expect the bolts to break. But if they do, at least you know you're not putting the same bolt that's going to break again back in.
You go with an aftermarket that's stronger.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? It just looks like these bolts are a little bit smaller maybe than some, you know, other brands on the cross manifold, so that could be part of it too, maybe.
Yeah, it certainly could. Certainly could.
Yeah. Okay, John. Well,
all right. Yeah. All right, take care. Yep, bye-bye.
Bye.
617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. We got about 10 minutes left, but we do need to pay some more bills. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. Couple things. October is Car Care Month. And do you want a set of tires for your car? We're giving away a set of four Michelin tires. Go to AAA.com's webpage, and there is a, if you go to the Car Care section, it'll say October Car Care, and there's a place where you can put your name in to win four Michelin tires valued up to $1,000. You need to answer a few questions to test your tire knowledge. So, and then you just put your name and address. And here, I'll give you a little clue. Here's the questions. Proper tire pressure is important to safe driving. Where can you find the proper inflation information? The answers are A, inside the driver's door. B, the car's owner's manual, the sidewall of the tire. Well, inside the driver's door jamb seems like the best answer there. Tire pressure tends to increase in colder weather. True or false? False, it decreases. If my tire tread is higher than 430 seconds, I don't need winter tires for my car. And A, true. B, false. C, it depends. C is the right number. So fill out your name and address, and you got to put in a phone number and an email, and you can win a set of four tires. Also, we did a Facebook Live thing where we answered car questions live on Facebook. That was at 9:30. On Thursday, we're doing another, a week from Thursday, we're doing another one on the 18th at 9:30, and the Thursday after that on the 25th, it says we're doing it at 9:30, but I know we're doing it later in the afternoon, so we're going to try an afternoon one. But anyway, go try it out and see what it is and see what you think and check it out. And that's, you know, Facebook is a funny thing. I post what I think are very thoughtful things on Facebook, and people don't say anything. Yesterday I was in Woonsocket, Rhode Island, and I was at a senior center. I was killing some time, and I walked around. I walked into the room where they play pool from time to time, and there was a stack of cassettes. And Dennis, did you see the artists on those cassettes?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, it was like T-Rex and and they had a cassette player, so they listened to it. So I thought it was kind of funny. So and a million people, and that's a way exaggeration, but interesting. Even one or two of the DJs from WZLX put a thumbs up with it. So it's funny how Facebook works.
Hey, John, this is Bobby Brooks. I saw that, too, and I have those cassettes.
Good for you. Hey, so you're filling in for the professor today.
Yeah, filling in for Paul. Actually, it's for a good thing. He called me, got in touch with me during the middle of the week. He had an opportunity to go down to D.C. and see his family. So he's going to hop down for the long weekend and have a little quality time with his family.
Yeah, it's always good because, you know, the more he goes down, the more he gets to, turn his grandson into a little monster, and then he leaves afterwards.
Yeah, spoils him rotten, and then leaves the rest of the parents.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way it's supposed to
work. I can't wait for those days.
Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to work.
Hey,
so.
I gotta ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
My uncle has this 1984 Cadillac Seville.
Yep.
He's had it garaged for 10 years, but there's only 56,000 miles on it. Who can I sell this thing to? Who would want this? It's beautiful. It looks great.
You got to find somebody who likes... First off... I know it has real sentimental attachment to you, but that was sort of the Seville bustle back, sort of the weird back end.
Yeah, it sure
and
is.
And not everyone loves those cars.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, people think they're not the prettiest car in the world. Right. So you get a little bit of that going against you, and it's kind of a funny thing because somebody needs to take it out, they need to clean it up, they need to get it running, and then at 56,000 miles with a car that's that old, do you drive it or do you hold on to it?
I went on more dates in that car. I'll tell you, it has an 8-track player in it, and it has that, like Dennis and I, it bounces, it like kind of glides as you drive.
You know, for somebody who's looking for kind of a cool old car, but the big thing is, you know, determine how much it's worth and find somebody. I would put, if I was trying to sell it, besides all the easy places like I See Cars and Car Gurus, I would probably put an ad in Hemmings Motor News.
Oh, okay.
And it's good. That one's going to cost you a little bit of money, but it's going to go out to a wider audience, and you might find somebody who says, you know what, this cool old Cadillac, I might want to drag it out, clean it up, get it looking good. And it's been in a garage for 10 years, right?
Yeah, it sure has been. We don't expect to get a lot. We understand that, it's a chance. But anywho, all right, it's all good stuff. See, the good doctor always gives good advice.
I'm not a customer for it, but, you know, I'm sure somebody out there is, and maybe just talking about it right now, I'll get an email, or you'll get an email that says, hey, I want to take a look at that caddy.
Yeah, maybe.
All good stuff. Hey, Bobby Brooks is filling in for Professor Paul Sullivan and the Irish Hit Parade. So Bobby's in charge of the very best in Irish music for the next 3 hours, so stay tuned. And also, if you're off this weekend for Columbus Day, have a great day. Talk to you all next week. Make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, and be good to your car. Bye-bye.